Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving in beautiful, sunny Aspen, Colorado.
Oh, I am so jealous. It's Ken Rudin, also in Aspen, Colorado. Matter of fact, I'm sitting right next to Ron Elving in Aspen, Colorado, courtesy of Aspen Public Radio.
And Ken, I think we should say a few words about the state that we're in.
We could use more money.
I think we could say that this is one of the best news states for the Democratic Party in this decade, and has been, in a sense, leading the way for the resurgence of the Democratic Party in the post-Bush era.
For the longest time, Colorado was considered a perfect swing state, but Republicans kept winning it. I think they've won it many. I think Bill Clinton may have won in 92, but that may be the only time the Democrats won it since LBJ in 64. But as more and more Democrats registered to vote, they picked up a Senate seat. They picked up now two Senate seats
Mark Udall and Michael Bennett.
Mark Udall replacing Wayne Allard. They have more House members, and Barack Obama carried the state quite handily, I say, in 2008. This state, which was always seen as a bellwether, as a swing state, now seems to be, if nothing else, certainly leaning blue.
I think it's fair to say that in the 90s and in the Bush era, there was a sense that this was becoming a red state, that this was a state that had moved more solidly into the Republican column. Again, as you say, a swing state reflecting the general national trend. But at this juncture, starting really in the mid-decade, and certainly in the last three congressional elections, we've seen the state move aggressively in the blue direction, and they now have five of their seven congressional districts in the hands of Democrats, including the eastern district of the state, which is practically Kansas, really, and also the western slope portion of the state, both of which were traditionally Republican seats, historically Republican seats, both in Democratic hands. This is really quite a turnaround, and if you will, a leading indicator or a sort of cutting-edge indicator of change in the West in favor of the Democrats.
You're right. In Colorado, as you say, five out of the seven House seats are held by the Democrats. Both Senate seats are held by the Democrats. The governorship, Bill Ritter is a Democrat and who's favored to win again in 2010. So, and as we've seen also in other states, in New Mexico, in Arizona, although it does have a Republican governor, but only because Janet Napolitano left to join the cabinet, in Montana, we've seen more and more Democrats winning statewide office, and again, which leaves the Republicans in a very lonely position that they could only count on the South. They used to count on the Rocky Mountain West. They no longer can.
Let's unpack this just a little further. What's making this happen? Why has the Republican Party slipped from its domination in the Rocky Mountain states, in the Western states in general?
Certainly a big part of it is a growth in Hispanic voting.
And a failure of the Republicans to hold the Hispanic vote, which they were doing fairly well with, or at least competitively with, earlier this decade.
But also we've seen Democrats running on social issues that always favored Republicans in the past. Brian Schweitzer in Montana, the governor of Montana, the new senator of Montana, John Tester, elected in 2006, defeated Conrad Burns, but also pro-gun, pro-life
Democrats.
Yeah, and socially conservative, but right. They are Democrats.
That's right. And I would say that the Colorado Democrats are pretty much national Democrats in the sense that they have not been deviating from most of the votes of the Democratic Party. Certainly their two senators look to be pretty loyal to the administration, to the Democratic
Reliably
leadership.
Reliably liberal, yes.
And so while that does not necessarily jibe with the historic way that Democrats have succeeded in the West, usually they've succeeded in the West by being more conservative than the National Party. It certainly has bolstered the National Party. And I think a little bit of this also reflects some disarray on the part of the Republican Party, which is having the same struggles between economic and social conservatives that we've seen elsewhere in the country. But they've been more severe here. And they've also had just some, you know, bad luck with candidates, bad luck with campaigns. Part of the news out here in Colorado this week is that Scott McGinnis, a former Republican congressman who's now running against Bill Ritter for the 2010 gubernatorial race, had an ad up.
Just a picture on his website.
Talking about how much he loves Colorado. How much he represents its values, and the mountains in the background have been revealed to be in Canada.
Well, you know what else, Ron? You know what else I love about Aspen? I can see Alaska from my kitchen window from here.
Alaska. Hey, who's the governor of Alaska right now?
Well, it's not Sean Parnell yet, but it's...
Won't it be Sean Parnell soon, though? Because I really thought we could spend some time in this podcast talking about Sean.
We don't talk about him enough. July 26th, but until then, it is Sarah Palin. She, as you may remember, she was the running mate of John McCain. You remember him?
John McCain.
In 2008, the Republican ticket. And she has... She, I guess, basically, it's old news by now, but we're still talking about it because it's still shocking when you think of it. Here it is, somebody who's a clearly one of the top candidates, thought to be the top candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in 2012.
Among some people.
Yeah, well, certainly among Republicans, and she's on everybody's list along with...
She's up there. She's up there. I don't think she was a dominant.
Mark Sanford and John Ensign.
John Ensign. Yeah, yeah, no.
Okay, right, so anyway, so Sarah Palin, and yet here she is with 18 months to go in her first term as governor, says, well, I'm quitting. Not only am I not going to run for re-election in 2010, which was not a surprise, but she also said she won't finish her term. And
that is a surprise.
That is a big surprise, especially if she thinks the quitting is going to lead her to prepare for the Republican presidential nomination. Do you announce that you're giving up a job that the voters sent you to so you could prepare for another political job?
Well, I don't think after almost a full week we really know what her main motivation was. She talked about her family. She talked about tired of the struggles with the Alaska legislature.
And let's not forget, there are serious considerations about her family, with her son, with medical bills, with the whole thing. She also has, you know, she has young children, and maybe she wants to make money, but go ahead.
And when we're talking about her family, we're also talking about some of the ridicule that her family's been subjected to. So she clearly does have some grievances, some bruises. And you brought up the money. And I do think that without any disrespect, this is a family with some financial strains at this point. She is on the hook for some legal bills because of investigations and so on in Alaska about Alaska issues not having to do with the 2008 presidential campaign. And she has a legitimate need to address some of that. And she is apparently choosing to do it by leaving public life, at least temporarily, and making some money on speeches. She's got a book deal coming up, and she's going to try to right the ship.
But she will also be very involved in politics. Word came out this week that she will campaign for Governor Rick Perry, who's going to be in a tough Republican primary in Texas next year. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison is challenging Perry for the governorship.
She could use help of a woman.
And there is Sarah Palin going to be campaigning for him in Texas. So she will keep her national profile.
Why is she campaigning for Rick Perry and not for Kay Bailey?
Well, for all her popularity, Kay Bailey Hutchison's popularity in Texas, the evangelical wing of the party never warmed up to her. They warmed up to Rick Perry.
Back to Sarah Palin. I think at this juncture we're all going to have to wait and see if there is another shoe to drop, but it appears that she's going to go into the private sector, spend a lot of time in the lower 48, make a lot of speeches, make a lot of money, and never go away in the sense that she is going to be a factor in the 2012 primaries one way or another.
And here's another Republican governor who's not going away. He may no longer be involved in the 2012 speculation, but certainly Mark Sanford, there's a lot of us thought, and I thought, that it was just a matter of hours when he was going to resign, but apparently he's going to stay. There was a censure motion that the Republican State Committee in South Carolina passed, censuring him, but not asking him to resign. Yeah,
there were a number of people on the committee who did ask him to resign publicly, and maybe a number of others who would have preferred that he do so, and it's not helping the brand for the South Carolina Republican Party, but for Mark Sanford, he believes that he's better off hanging in there and trying to restore his own dignity.
Well, part of the calculation here is that as many Republicans there are who dislike Mark Sanford, there are even more who dislike Andre Bauer, his lieutenant governor.
That's a factor.
Mark Sanford is term limited for 2010. He can't run again. Obviously, if Sanford were to resign now, Lieutenant Governor Barrett would have a leg up on 2010. There are other Republicans out there, perhaps Henry McMaster, the Attorney General, perhaps a Congressman, Gresham Barrett. They want to be governor too, and if Barrett became the governor in the wake of a Sanford resignation, he would have a leg up, and they don't want that to happen. So there's a lot of calculations going on in the Palmetto State.
Other governors with problems this week. Your own home state of New York, Ken.
Yes, and that also is going to be unresolved for now. The latest news is there is a 31-31 deadlock in the state Senate. Now, ordinarily, the lieutenant governor would break the tie, but there is no lieutenant governor because David Patterson, who used to be the lieutenant governor,
is now the governor.
Yes. So for a year we've had no lieutenant governor, but now we have a 31-31 split since June 8th in the state Senate.
That's Republicans and Democrats, right? Not men and women.
Correct. David Patterson this week announced Richard Ravitch, the former chairman of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority.
And I'd been wondering what had happened to Richard.
Well, actually, he was a pretty big guy in New York politics.
MTA is a big deal.
He helped bail out New York City in the 1970s under Hugh Carey, Governor Hugh Carey.
I'd been wondering what happened to Hugh Carey.
He's still alive, by the way. And Richard Ravitch did run for mayor in 1989, lost to David Dinkins in the Democratic primary. David Patterson announced this 76-year-old Richard Ravitch would be lieutenant governor just for the end of the year until 2010.
But no.
Well, but not only are the Republicans saying this is unconstitutional,
Andrew Cuomo.
Another Democrat, Andrew Cuomo, the potential challenger to Patterson in the 2010 Democratic primary, says, you can't do that. And so we're back to where we started. Even though there's a lieutenant governor, there's still controversy and it's still unresolved.
And a lot of agenda still waiting to be addressed. In New Hampshire.
A state we always take for granted.
And a state where Judd Gregg has been a statewide official since I think you and I were children. He was governor. He's been a senator for a very long time. And now he is retiring in 2010. And he is probably going to leave a vacancy that would be a pretty good pickup possibility for the Democrats, who have been on the march in New Hampshire almost as much as they have been here in Colorado. But the Republicans have a champion entering the field.
They do, and it looks like that Kelly Ayotte, who is the state attorney general, is a Republican, and it's a big coup for the Republicans because basically they have had nobody. Paul Hodes, the congressman there, has announced he's running and is considered a strong candidate, and the Republicans tried to get so many people to run. They tried to get Judge Gregg to change his mind. They tried to get John Sununu, the former senator, to come back. He said no. They tried to get
I think that's remarkable, by the way. I could see why Judd Gregg, having made his decision to say no mas, would stay away. But why not John Sununu? Why is he not coming
back? That's a good
back?
Question. You know, his father, the former governor, the former Bush chief of staff, is the chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party.
Yes, he is, even today.
And Sununu is considered a very smart guy. He lost to Gene Shaheen in 2008.
And that wasn't, you know, it wasn't the sort of thing that turned entirely on his
no,
record.
No, it was an anti-Republican.
Right. It was a national trend.
But actually, just as Colorado, as we've seen in Colorado, which is where we are right now, New Hampshire has also been electing more and more Democrats to statewide office. And so perhaps Sununu thought that the climate doesn't benefit him. But Kelly Ayotte, the state attorney general of New Hampshire, is a Republican. Looks like she'll be in the race for the Senate and considered to be a good shot, a good candidate for the Republican Party if they can recapture their old magic.
Okay, still in Senate news, candidate news for 2010, moving back west a little ways to Illinois. More good news, I think, for the Republican Party there, where their Congressman Mark Kirk has indicated that he is willing to run for the Senate seat that is currently held by Roland Burris. That, of course, was previously Barack Obama's seat. And also, perhaps good news for the Republicans, that Lisa Madigan, who is the state attorney general, has decided she wants to stay in Illinois. She doesn't want to run for that Senate seat. Now, there are plenty of other Illinois Democrats who do want to run for the seat, but it's been felt that she was the one who would have the best shot. She is a woman. She is representative of a powerful family in Illinois politics. And Barack Obama personally asked her to be the Democratic candidate in 2010 and to run for this particular seat. And his selection of her, I think, speaks volumes.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, Lisa Madigan always wanted to be governor. She, from the beginning, she wanted to be governor and was always planning to run against Rod Blagojevich. Of course, Blagojevich is no longer there. The new governor there is Pat Quinn, who is that's not ethically challenged the way Blagojevich was. And a lot of Democrats said, why run against Pat Quinn? He's a good guy. Why don't you run for the Senate? Because Roland Burris has not raised any money. He's been an embarrassment, blah, blah, blah. Now, the White House wanted her to run for the Senate, but she never wanted to really be in the Senate. She has two young daughters. She didn't want to come to Washington with them. And so when she announced that she'll run for a third term as Attorney General, perhaps, she's only 43 years old. She'll be 43 this month. She could run for governor in 4 years down the line, for all we know. But the decision by Madigan not to seek higher office, I think, is very good news for the Republican Party. And that's probably what spurred Mark Kirk into saying, I'm going to go for the Senate after all.
That's right. He had been waiting around kind of deciding whether he wanted to run for the Senate or possibly run for governor, where his best chance lay in 2010. But he's certainly somebody that the Republican Party has been looking to as a big part of its future as they try to mount a comeback in that state that has been so rocky for them in this past decade. So we've looked ahead to a lot of the races we're expecting in 2010. We've taken a little tour around the country, but I think we need to come back to Washington next week. And the big story in Washington next week, of course,
is the unresolved Minnesota Senate race. Oh, no, wait.
No, wait, Ken, we lost that one.
Oh, it's
gone. We finally have 60 senators. This
Al Franken,
week,
right?
Al Franken took the oath of office in Washington and has begun the Al Franken term. And one thing we'll be looking to Al Franken to do right from the very beginning is to participate in the hearings into the confirmation of Supreme Court nominee Sonia Sotomayor, President Obama's first choice for the Supreme Court.
That's right. Al Franken is appointed to the Senate Judiciary Committee. The hearings begin next week. Unless something from her past comes up that could derail it, it's hard to see her not getting overwhelming approval. There's no Democrat who has indicated that they will not vote for Sotomayor, and many Republicans are thought to vote for her, perhaps both Snow and Collins from Maine, Mel Martinez of Florida, probably more. You still will get 30-some-odd Republicans voting against her, and you'll probably see some tough questioning about her record and her background and things like that. But ultimately, I see there's no way that the opposition can stop her nomination.
Maybe not the opposition, but what if something else were to stop it? What if she were to give an answer to a question that erupted into controversy? What if she were to lose her temper, perhaps? Or what if she were to get into a verbal jousting match with Lindsey Graham or anyone else on that particular committee who might attempt to, you know, needle her a little bit over the course of those 3 or 4 days?
Well, I'm sure they're going to try. I'm sure she's been counseled not to do that. There was early reports about her temper and her temperament and things like that. But first of all, I think she's too smart to fall for that bait. And second of all, even if there is something, an ugly confrontation, it may embolden some Republicans, even more Republicans, to vote against her. But I suspect that no Democrat will vote against her.
So we're expecting her to be confirmed with something in the line of 65 votes.
I think that's right.
And she will become only the third woman to serve on the United States Supreme Court and the first Hispanic to serve on the Supreme Court. And that's it for this week's Political Podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR's mothership back in Washington, D.C.
Ron, safe flight.
You too, Ken.
Every mountain.